Igwala on 702.
For the curious.
Live.
Online.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
DSTV.
And 92.7.
And 106 FM.
It is 7.5 minutes after 12. Good afternoon to you. It is Tuesday, the 6th of November, 2018. And you're listening to the Xolani Igwala show here on 702 and Cape Talk. And it really is great to have your company. Lots happening, and we'll be keeping you in touch with your world as it happens. Big story out of the city of Cape Town. Cape Townians have a new mayor this afternoon. Dan Plato has been elected as Cape Town's new executive mayor during a special council sitting, which took place a little earlier on. He takes the reins of the city of Cape Town for the second time. So what I'd like to do is to get your reaction, particularly if you are a Cape Townian or maybe a Western Cape citizen, but broadly again, wherever you may be across South Africa and you want to respond to the development in Cape Town, I really would like to get your reaction there. I was just watching political parties in the city of Cape Town also reacting to this. EFF councillor Melikhaya Xeko says, when Plato was mayor almost 10 years ago, the people of Khayelitsha had porta potties. He's mayor again, and they're still using porta potties. So not much has changed in the past 10 years, he says. He says Plato is stepping in as the mayor in a divided DA caucus. See, also the ACDP's Grant Huskin has been saying the same thing. He says a broken DA caucus, failed promises, and residents who have lost faith in the Democratic Alliance and Mr. Plato. What is your reaction then to the election of the new mayor in the city of Cape Town? Here are the numbers. You can send me a quick SMS at 31702. But also, I'm looking at your calls on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. I prefer if you send me a nice, quick, short, sharp voice note on 072-702-1702. It's 9.5 minutes after 12.
Xolani Igwala
on 702 and Cape Talk.
All right, we'll be talking to an EWN reporter about the election of the new mayor then in the city of Cape Town. But a couple of other stories that we are monitoring for you. So Malusi Gigaba, the embattled Minister of Home Affairs, is expected to appear in the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs today. But he's been saying a lot of things, trying to defend himself. And among other things, he says that there is just a calculated plot to assassinate his political character. What I want to do is to talk to a political analyst about his defense here. Has Malusi Gigaba got any defense? Politically, has he got a future? We'll get a political analyst just to talk to us about that. He seems to have been, you know, sending signals to the ANC. He says he will report to the ANC. NEC will report all manner of things that are going on. But we haven't heard the ANC say a word about this issue. So what of Malusi Gigaba's political future? We'll get an analyst to talk to us about that. It's 10 after 12.
The Xolani Igwala Show.
Here's another very interesting story, and I'm certain that you'd like to hear about this. Tiger Brands, in conjunction with Stellenbosch University, will today be launching the Center for Food Safety. Now, they say to us that the center is a one-of-a-kind applied food science research consortium founded by Stellenbosch University and the food industry. It'll provide expert opinion and academic support to the industry, conduct research in food safety, as well as participate effectively with government in order to ensure that food safety regulations are based on sound scientific evidence. This is important. It really is. It's about food systems in South Africa. It's about whether or not the food controls are in place and are working in this country. In your view, how weak or strong are food controls in our country? And who is responsible for food security, for food safety? Food management systems, do they work? I'd really like to hear from you. Drop me a quick SMS, 11 after 12.
702. Xolani Igwala, 12 to 1.
Well, we're starting in Cape Town, where they now have a new mayor, Dan Plato, who was elected a little earlier on during a special seating this morning. He takes the reins of the city of Cape Town for the second time. He was elected by a majority, receiving 146 votes in a council of about 208 councillors. Let's talk to Monique Mortlock, who's been monitoring the election this morning. Monique, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Xolani.
So there was a little bit of a back and forth on the number of councillors who were in the chamber, but in the end, it was easy for Dan Plato to cross the line.
Yes, the road to the mayoral shift wasn't an easy one this morning because there was, as you said, a lot of back and forth. The ANC seemed to have tried to throw a spanner in the works by questioning why the Speaker was going from there being 214 councillors in chambers to 216, eventually to 208. And there was also some issues that the ANC had with the fact that the Speaker had sent out an email a few days prior to the sitting announcing that Plato is the dearest nominee or Plato is one of the nominees, the main nominee for the mayor position. So all of these things played out right before a secret ballot. But as you mentioned, Plato then won by 146 votes. Kolani Sotashi was the ANC's nominee. He received 46.
Yep.
And then Grant Hatton from the ACDP, Sotashi received 53 and Hatton received 3 votes. And then there were 6 councillors who abstained from voting. And Plato then in his speech, when he was handed the mayoral chain, he spoke about focusing on policing. As you know, he was the Western Cape MEC for community safety, so that's something that lies quite close to his heart. He's planning, as one of his first orders of business, he's planning to install more Metro Police officers. But there was varying responses from the different councillors in chambers. Some saying they'll support him, others saying, you know what, he's got a lot in his plate. He's entering a DA caucus that's divided, and others like the ACDP saying, not the ACDP, the Democratic Independent Party saying what they've heard from him today is not new. They don't know what type of change he's going to bring. So a lot of differing opinions from the election councillors.
Just picking up on this view of him walking into a divided DA caucus, were there any signs of those divisions at all in terms of how people voted for Dan Plato, or did everybody vote for him?
It doesn't seem that way. And as one of the DA councillors mentioned afterwards, she said that, look at us, you say we are divided, but yet the majority of us seem to have voted for Plato, because, I mean, out of the 208 councillors present, 146 voted for Plato. And a lot of them cheered when he stood up. It is worth noting that there were louder celebrations from the ANC side when Plato came up to receive his mayoral chain than from the DA side. But I'm not sure that's an indication of anything. But it seems as if the DA was largely in support of this move for Plato as mayor.
All right, Monique Mortlock, let me thank you very much. Thanks indeed. I'm Monique Mortlock, monitoring that story. And you'll be hearing a lot of reaction, of course, political reaction throughout the day on this radio station. But again, if you have your own quick reaction that you'd like to give, you're more than welcome to send me a voice note. 072-702-1702. It's 15 after 12.
More at strasart.co.za.
The secret to every great meal is, of course, great ingredients. Using only the highest quality quartz, we mix in cutting-edge design and top off each surface with an appetizing lifetime warranty. Friends, Food and Caesarstone Countertops is a recipe for success.
Visit caesarstone.co.za for a quote from an accredited fabricator you can trust, and choose your favorite Caesarstone surfaces for your home. Caesarstone, it's different.
LFP's turnkey BE-aligned skills development solutions make BE compliance an achievable goal. We offer learnerships that are strictly aligned to BE guidelines. Our solutions give the opportunity to implement skills development in your business whilst gaining maximum BE points at the fraction of the cost. Our off-site simulator and e-campus both enable clients to claim all incentives such as tax rebates and grants towards their skills spend. Let LFP be your BE-aligned skills development partner. LFPtraining.co.za.
702. 702. Kolani's on Twitter at Kuala A.
And I'll certainly tell you what people are thinking on Twitter, particularly around the developments in the city of Cape Town. But also, one of the big stories that we're going to do is the launch of this food safety center. It's a center for food safety by the Stellenbosch University together with Tiger Brands. It's quite an important one on the back of listeriosis, but also these complaints that we have had where people are saying that tuck shops in the townships in particular are selling rotten food in certain instances, but also fake, some saying imitation, whatever it is. Who is responsible to ensure that the management of the food systems in this country are up and running? So we'll certainly look at that particular story. Another story that we're looking at, of course, today, an important one in the US, midterm elections. And I was just reading some of the comments, particularly by US President Donald Trump, who said that it was in a rally yesterday that everything we have achieved is at stake tomorrow. He was talking about the midterm elections today, but also former President Barack Obama tweeting that the vote in the midterm elections might be the most important of our lifetime. So it's an important one. We'll get our reporter to talk to us about that a little later on. But also, if you're monitoring it and you have a comment to make, please let us know. You must remember that at stake, of course, the two houses, House of Representatives in the US as well as the Senate. So certainly we'll hear from our reporter. 19 after 12.
Kulani Gwala on 702 and Cape Talk.
All right, let's talk about this Center for Food Safety. Then we're on the line now to Mary Jane Mrifi, Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Tiger Brands. Mary Jane, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Kulani.
Thank you for coming on. Tell us a little bit about this Center for Food Safety. What is it about and why are you involved?
The Center for Food Safety is being launched by Tiger Brands in conjunction with Stellenbosch University. And it was born out of the recent crisis that we experienced in South Africa around listeria and listeriosis. And the company felt, Tiger Brands felt that, you know, for a company of this size that complied with all of the standards, to find itself in a situation where listeria was found on our site, that clearly something needed to be done. And it needed to be done through a multi-sectoral forum that would look at improving the standards, that would look at doing research and consumer awareness to ensure that South Africa never finds itself in a situation like that again.
Who currently is responsible for doing that kind of work, that research, that monitoring of the systems? Who is supposed to do that?
It's supposed to be a multi-sectoral forum with the academics doing the research, using that research knowledge to inform the kind of policy and regulations that would then be put in place by the regulators, but also using the research to create awareness and training of the consumers in terms of food issues like handling, help to prepare and managing the food safety in the home and in the supply chain process.
But I guess what I'm asking, Mary Jane, is, you know, prior to the existence of this center, who has been doing that kind of work?
Well, you'll find other entities that look at food safety, but not in a consolidated, coordinated and collaborative way in this way, where they would be looking at aspects of it. What we are proposing here and what we are putting forward is this holistic look that involves all of the stakeholders to ensure that, you know, there's academic research that informs policy, that also educates and creates awareness among consumers. So really looking at the total improvement of the food safety system within the country to ensure that we can manage these types of crises and actually even, you know, kind of anticipate through the research that will be done.
Sure. And again, as you pointed out earlier on, it's a lesson out of what happened with that outbreak of listeriosis in this country. So in your analysis, where was the breakdown that led to that outbreak? Was it because the systems are weak, food control system are not working in this country, and perhaps food management systems not working?
I think what it highlighted for us is that the food standards and food systems needed to be upgraded, needed to be refined to take into consideration South Africa's own unique circumstances. You know, we as Tiger Brands complied with all of the food standards and the processes, but we found ourselves in this situation, and clearly something needed to be done differently. We agree that and understand that listeria is everywhere in the environment. We need to manage that, and we need to manage it, including not just in the production processes, but through the entire supply and value chain, involving consumers, involving our employees, because this is a airborne and it's mainly brought by human traffic into the facilities, into the home. So it's hence the three legs of this Food Safety Institute, the research, the policy stuff, and the consumer awareness and education.
Okay, fantastic. Mary Jane Murifi, thank you very much. She's Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Tiger Brands. I'd like to get your views on the issues of food safety in this country. So the acting director of this center has been quoted as saying somewhere, in fact, it's he says, with the worldwide increase in food-related diseases, developing countries bear the greatest burden. Africa has the highest incidence of food-related diseases and associated deaths among all age groups. Food-related diseases also have a significant impact on consumer health and the availability of the food industry and associated businesses. With this in mind, the need for a center dedicated to food safety is more important than ever before. That's Professor Pieter Gous, who is the acting director for the Center for Food Safety. You might want to comment on this. It's an important one. 24 after 12.
Kulani Gwala on 702
for the curious.
So, as they say, then a week is a very long time in politics. Ask Manusu Kigaba. Last week has been such a difficult week for him, which started with that video over the weekend. And then things just went south from there on. Just so much has been happening. He alleges that there is a big political plot against him, and that those who are trying to plot against him will not succeed. He is fighting back. But has he really got a political future? Let's hear from Professor Somadota Figeni, a political analyst who joins us on the line. Professor Figeni, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Colin, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Thank you for your time. All right, then, Malusi Kigaba will be facing the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs today. Just one of so many issues that he's dealing with as a politician. But he seems to be fighting back. Is it successful?
It's not as successful, but at the same time, it might be effective to his base. In other words, his loyal supporters may take this one. But the issue of saying there's a political conspiracy has become a lingua franca, as something very common among political leaders whenever they're in trouble. But that never explains why they limp from one challenge to the other if they believe there is someone who is out to get them.
Let's talk about his place in the ANC today. I mean, one of the things that he said, I think it was yesterday, that he will be reporting to the ANC about what's been happening, particularly that leaked report from the Public Enterprises Committee that's investigating Eskom. Does anybody care about him in the ANC? Has he still got a base in the ANC?
Remember that ANC is a fragmented body, and those who won in Nazareth, it's by a very low margin. Therefore, some might be thinking, if he goes, it will be me tomorrow. So there is a sense of collective purge that the likes of Supra, the Ace Makhashules, the others who supported Jacob Zuma might believe that if you let him go so easily, then they might be the next. So they might react in terms of self-preservation, not because of any principle or facts.
See, I think what is difficult with Malusi Kigaba in particular is that I'm not sure whether either of the factions that I'm talking about, the big factions within the ANC, actually trusts him. Because on one hand, he was not so much with the Cyril Ramaphosa faction. But on the other, towards the end of Zuma's presidency, he went on CNN and he spoke about Zuma having to do the right thing, which the other faction felt was a betrayal. So who will protect him?
Actually, it goes deeper than that. If you go back to Polokwane, leading to that time, he was closer to Thabo Mbeki. And he was even at times seen as more or less mimicking his mannerism.
Yeah.
And now you do have the time when... So this might be a demonstration of political entrepreneurship, which is not very much consistent in terms of many people who may start not trusting that he will be with them.
But also, I suppose there's a broader question about what actually went wrong with Malusi Kigaba. Because, I mean, there was a time when people were saying potentially the future president of South Africa, good young politician, etc. And things just went off the rails.
I do think that at the height when there was a sense of impunity and a sense of immunity, whoever was stealing or doing wrong things, he might have also indulged into that particular space of invincibility. As Dawson says, chains of habit are too weak to be felt until they're too strong to be broken. I think sins of incumbency and occupying certain positions and beginning to think that things may not change, it might have happened at that particular space. Issues of materialism, conspicuous exhibition of wealth or material being, all those things were not too far from him as a younger person.
Final question, though, is about President Cyril Ramaphosa and what he needs to do around this issue. I mean, if Nene jumped because of the Gupta situation, now you've got the public protector who has said that this minister violated the constitutional responsibilities, etc. What can and what should President Cyril Ramaphosa do?
He may, just as a matter of political pride, not to respond to DA's immediate demand to fire Malusi Gigaba. We've seen a pattern. He may just investigate or set up a process to take action against him and ultimately fire him. Or he might, by time closer to elections, he's going to change cabinet anyway. But all the same, I don't see Malusi Gigaba surviving all the arrows and spears which are coming his way.
All right, Professor Somadu Dafigeni, listen, thank you very much. He doesn't see Malusi Gigaba surviving the deluge or whatever it is that is happening in his political life at the moment. What do you think, though? Do you see him surviving? Is he one of those cats with nine lives? Give me a call. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567.
702. Kulani's on Twitter @
Gwala X. One or two messages on Twitter, people responding to some of the stories that we have been covering. An interesting response from Sarah. Remember, we were talking about that Center for Food Safety, and we were talking, of course, to a representative from Tiger Brands. And Sarah says, Tiger Brands are being disingenuous here. There are independent inspection companies operating in South Africa that have been offering food safety testing for years. They probably didn't want to pay for those companies, says Sarah. I wonder if you're one of perhaps people working for those companies and you want to weigh in on this issue of food testing and whether or not the system really works in South Africa. Is it helpful? Please send me a quick message on Twitter @GwalaX. It is 22 minutes now before 1.
702.
WhatsApp Kulani on 072-702-1702.
What about the story of cash in transit heists? See that the police say they are cracking down on these heists. The police minister, Begicele, added earlier on that 237 suspects have been arrested since April this year in connection with the cash-in-transit heists. Let's talk now to Brigadier Vish Naidu, who speaks on behalf of the South African Police Service. Brigadier Naidu, nice talking to you. Hi.
Good afternoon to you, Kolani, and thank you very much for this opportunity.
No, much appreciated. It seems as if the police are doing well. A 36% decrease in cash-in-transit heists.
Yes, Kolani. Indeed, I mean, you remember in April and May this year, we were plagued. There was a sudden surge of cash in transit heists taking place, particularly in the Gauteng area, Limpopo, Northwest, and the Free State. And, of course, the minister and the national commissioner on the 4th of June came together and they pronounced on the national stabilization intervention, which, of course, is starting now to yield significant successes. Apart from the fact that we were able to reduce these crimes by 36%, I think what's important is that we also took 237 of these CIT robbers off our streets, which we are hoping in the future we will see lesser and lesser of these robberies being committed.
Sure. I suppose the question about the suspects is whether these 237 are kingpins, so to speak, or they're just runners. Have we got the real people who are organizing all of this, the kingpins?
Kolani, I don't know if you remember, there was a lot of communication around the arrest of one BB that was arrested
in Wellington,
Zananda, in the shopping center. That's the one. Mm. He's the number one. He was wanted for 23 or 24 counts of cash in transit heist robberies. But The disconcerting thing about that was this man was committing robberies while he was out on bail for having committed similar robberies before. So, and then, of course, then we set up a list of top 40 and then top 20, and we've arrested quite a number of them from the list of the top 20. So there are kingpins amongst those 237 that have been arrested. But, of course, there are some also outstanding, and our crime intelligence is continuing to work tirelessly on identifying and having those arrested as well.
Just a final one, because the minister, and I think you've alluded to it, attributed the successes to the mobilization of what he refers to as the 72-hour activation plan. Tell us about the 72-hour activation plan.
Well, basically, what happens is it's predominantly used, when a crime is committed. So it's a mobilization of critical resources, including crime intelligence, forensic experts, as well as the Director of Propriety Crimes Investigation, which is known as the Hawks, and then our tactical response teams like the Task Force, the National Intervention Unit, and the tactical response team, which teams we use during, specialized intelligence-driven operations to arrest suspects. So in the 72 hours, we maximize the deployment from those various disciplines to ensure that no information, intelligence, and evidence is lost during that process of investigation. More often than not, we are able to even arrest suspects within the 72 hours. Remember, in the Western Cape recently, the lawyer was gunned down.
Yeah.
His 9-year-old child was wounded. Within an hour of that incident happening, we arrested the first suspect, and before the end of the day, we arrested the second suspect. At that point, we believe that only two of them were involved in that shooting. So there were similar cases like that where suspects were arrested within a very short period of time, maybe not necessarily within the 72-hour period, but shortly within a week. Like if you take, for example, on the 29th of October, we had an incident at a service station in Katlehong where a security guard was shot and wounded and subsequently died in hospital.
Mm.
By the end of the week, on Friday, we arrested four men and a woman in connection with that and recovered firearms, vehicles, and so forth. So that 72-hour activation plan is proven to be very, very effective.
All right. Brigadier Vishnaidu, let me thank you very much for coming on at this time. But still on the same issue, let's talk to Kevin Tuname, Head of Service Delivery at the South African Banking Risk Association, SABRIC. Kevin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Kulani, and thank you for having me on your show.
No, thanks for coming on. And I remember an interview with SABRIC that was on this radio station not too long ago, and SABRIC confirmed the heist that had taken place, the numbers. In fact, SABRIC called the spate shocking. Having heard what the police are saying, are you convinced that they're making breakthroughs?
Certainly, Kulani, the statistics alone indicate a reduction in the cash and transit heists from between the period May and date to date. I think we obviously don't correlate that information, but I'm aware that there have been quite significant number of arrests that have taken place. But I think the challenge, however, is that to arrest may sound easy, but I think that those particular individuals that have been arrested need to be successfully prosecuted. And that's the challenge I think we face, and obviously this takes a little bit of time. So yes, I think generally the police have certainly made a huge impact and probably stabilised the situation.
Sure. And I suppose what complicates matters even more is what the Brigadier was talking about a short while ago, the cash in transit kingpin that was arrested a while ago, Wellington Gananda, was on bail when he conducted some of his crimes. So you arrest them, they're on bail, they come out and they do the same thing.
Well, obviously these are things that that were raised with the National Commissioner from a CA cash and transit point of view as concerns that we were seeing arrests taking place, people were granted bail and were being rearrested for similar offences, whether they be in other provinces or in more or less in the areas where they originally were arrested. And they were probably receiving bail a second time. I think these were the concerns that we raised at the time. And certainly there's been some impact in this regard. But obviously bail remains the right term that they can bring, and it has to be dealt with in court.
Just a final question, looking at the numbers again, and you do admit that there's some sort of stabilization that's going on. What would you attribute it to?
Well, I think that starting from May, I think that the police had launched a number of interventions. And also what one has to bear in mind is that the cash and transit companies had also contributed in this sense that from their point of view, they'd also contributed to looking at some sort of support, which I'm not going to go into detail about, in terms of the vehicles that they have on road. So a combination of this, but I do think that that the effective intervention that the police had launched in the four major provinces, those would be the major provinces where these incidents were occurring, is Gauteng, Limpopo, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, that the efforts that were driven from the interventions that the police had launched had certainly reaped some benefit in terms of the reduction we've seen.
All right, Kevin, I must thank you for your time. He is Head of Service Delivery at the South African Banking Risk Information Center, SABRIC. Thanks indeed. And perhaps you are also monitoring the movements around this issue of cash in transit heists in our country and you'd like to weigh in, send me a text message. 14 now before 1.
702.
WhatsApp Kulani on 072-702-1702.
All right, a lot of your reaction, of course, on some of the stories that we have covered on the show, including the election of Dan Plato as the new mayor of Cape Town. Let's play a voice note.
Hi, Kulani. It's John from Johannesburg. I'm really sick and tired of this recycling thing. Dan Plato again, as much as that guy of ANC said that Dan Plato is coming again after he failed to fix toilets. They did the same as well. Don't we have new people? Thank you.
All right. What would you like to add when it comes to the election of Dan Plato in Cape Town? But also a lot of you reacting to the story about the Food Safety Center and the involvement of Tiger Brands. Not everybody thinks that Tiger Brands is in it for a good reason. Let's take a listen to this.
702.
SMS Kulani on 31702.
Hi Kulani, this is David in Tswane. Is it really a good idea for a company that is going to be regulated in terms of food safety to be involved in developing the regulations?
Conflict of interest maybe? What do you think? It's 12 before 1.
The Kulani Kuala Show.
All right, so some developments in the West Rand municipality. Remember, it's one of those municipalities that is now feeling the effects of wrongfully depositing monies with VBS. So was it early this week when some officials of the municipality were allegedly taken hostage because workers were saying they hadn't received their salaries. They had to wait the following day for their salaries. I believe that the province has tried to get involved in assisting this municipality so that it is able to deal and pay its suppliers. But Sfiso Zulu is looking at the story and he joins me in the studio now. Sfiso, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Kulani.
And what is happening this afternoon?
Well, this afternoon, the municipal workers at the West Rand district municipality are threatening to down tools today because their third-party payments have not been made. This includes medical aid, provident fund, housing allowances. So what they're saying is that they have been deducted from their salaries, but the municipality has not met its mandate of paying or meeting them halfway to pay. And this has been going on for the past 3 months. Like you've already mentioned, last week there was that hostage situation. That was over salaries, last month's salaries. Those salaries were subsequently paid overnight following the hostage situation. But the third-party benefit payments have not happened since the past 3 months. And so what they're calling for is that they want those payments to be made because they've been given a grace period of 3 months, which ends tomorrow. And subsequent to that, it will lapse and they will be in trouble with the banks and all the third parties that are involved. So basically, they're saying we're going to down tools until those payments are made.
Wow. Have you heard anything from the province about how they're trying to solve the situation?
So we understand that MEC Panyaza Lesufi has been sent to the municipality as a political deployment, as well as the MEC for COCTA, Mr. Uhuru Moyilwa. They are trying to come up with the plan. I understand part of the plan is to first come up with, you know, some sort of a financial situation to make the payment today, or subsequently go to the MEC for Finance, Barbara Creese's office, where she will write a letter and then send a letter to the third parties to sort of make some sort of an arrangement to say the payments will be made on a certain day. I've spoken to some of the worker representatives or the, you know, organized labor, and they are saying that that is as far as they understand the situation is being solved. So the both MECs are trying to come up with some sort of a plan to speak to the third parties who are awaiting their payments to say that we will be making the payments at some point. We don't know when that is going to happen, but yeah, that's a plan that is being made.
All right, Sifiso Zulu, listen, thank you very much. Monitoring that story again, weigh in here. I suppose what's surprising is that nobody's been arrested among those people then who made a decision to invest in inverted commas at VBS.
Yes, as far as that is concerned, the municipality has said that the investment was made way before their financial troubles, and there hasn't been any arrests as far as the investigation is concerned. I remember the ANC in the West Rand has been vocal and said that those who are implicated, whether it's from the municipality or whatever, but those who are implicated in taking municipal funds and investing them to VBS, you know, the law must take its course. So it's quite a surprise that, you know, no action has been taken. But obviously, that's a matter that's subject for investigations.
All right, Sifiso Zulu, thank you very much. I suppose it proves exactly that whole thing about corruption is not a victimless crime. Look at all of those people who are now panicking and are likely to lose their benefits as a result of all of this corruption. It's 8 before 1.
The Kolani Gwala Show.
The Kolani Gwala Show.
On 702.
It is 5 minutes now before one. Well, let's look at the midterm elections in the U.S. I see in one of his final rallies yesterday, U.S. President Donald Trump said, everything we have achieved is at stake tomorrow, talking about this midterm elections going on today. And I also saw that former President Barack Obama tweeted and said, the vote might be the most important of our lifetimes. That's Barack Obama also referring to the midterm elections. But how important are these elections? We're on the line now to Nadia Nefitu, who is EWN US correspondent. Nadia, good afternoon to you. It's actually very early in the morning for you.
Hello from a very chilly New York City. Yes, we're looking at about 10 degrees here today.
Ooh, all right. And the elections get underway. The voting booths will open in about, what, 5 minutes' time?
Yeah, the polls will be open in about 5 minutes' time. It'll be 6 a.m. local time. They'll be open until 6 p.m., which is about 1 a.m. in South Africa. And most people have been given time off of work to make sure that they vote. There's such a highly charged mood in the country at the moment. You've had initiatives by businesses to make sure that people will be able to get out and vote. Many of the stores here have had signs up for days before today that they've been saying that they will be closed, and making sure that, you know, bigger companies like PayPal and Walmart have been saying that they're giving their employees paid leave as well to make sure that everybody gets out to vote.
Wow. And again, I suppose it just emphasizes the point that both Mr. Trump and President Obama have made about the importance of this election. Why is it so important to the Americans?
This has been such a huge culmination of both sides, the Democrats and the Republicans. The Republicans have control of Congress, the two main bodies of it, House of Representatives and the Senate, and the Democrats are trying to take back some kind of power from this, because there are 435 seats in the House of Representatives and 35 of the 100 seats in the Senate that they need to be able to try and put a halt to a lot of President Donald Trump's policies. This is going to basically influence the rest of his, the next 2 years of his term. It's halfway through his office as president. He has been the most divisive that we have seen. He has been very controversial. There's been a lot of policies that have been hitting up against what President Barack Obama before him had laid in place. So if the Democrats are able to get some kind of hold back in Congress, they'll be able to do things like, for example, initiate an investigation in to his tax records, why we haven't seen those be released, the idea of an impeachment, which has been spoken about from the start of his term here as president, the investigation that has been into the alleged interference of Russia in the U.S. presidential election, the outcome of that investigation could be affected by this, because if President Donald Trump and the Republicans continue to have their hold in Congress, these kinds of things won't be pursued. We'll see more of a hard line on, for example, immigration, things that President Donald Trump ran his initial campaign on. He's going to, as we've been seeing him double down now in these days leading up to today, he'll be able to continue harder with those policies rather than the Democratic side of Congress. So this has been really huge. We've seen celebrities, high-profile personalities across the board, everybody has been talking about this. And, you know, usually midterm elections don't mean too much, Nolani. It's about the presidential elections. But these elections are really, if the political pundits are to be believed, and definitely the mood of the country over the last 2 years is anything to go by. People are really wanting to try and get back some kind of, I want to say sanity, because some of the headlines and stories that have come out in the past 2 years since President Donald Trump took office have really been unlike anything we've seen here in recent years.
Sure. Just a quick and final one, Nadia, for us. What are the chances, though, of the Democrats wresting control of one or both chambers?
Well, you do need a couple of the key seats there. So the pollsters are saying that it looks like there are about 17 seats that the Democrats could take comfortably for the House of Representatives, but then there are still a couple that may be up for grabs, and that's where we have to keep an eye on it. And, you know, even polling has been not so, you can't take the polls as previously in the past, looking up to the presidential election. If you'd gone by the polls, Hillary Clinton would have been the winner. So, you know, everything has been very different this time around, taking the polls a little bit lightly, a little bit more lighter, and looking at actually, we basically won't know until we know, which hopefully the results will start to come in from 1 a.m. tonight and follow over. So perhaps when you wake up tomorrow morning, you'll have a clearer idea of exactly how successful the Democrats have been.
Okay, fantastic. Listen, Nadia, thank you very much. Nadia Nyefitu, U.S. EWN correspondent, reporting on a developing story. And you'll be hearing a lot of that throughout the afternoon here on this radio station. I have got to thank you now for staying with us for the past hour. We'll be back again tomorrow between midday and 1 o'clock. It is indeed 1 o'clock. Cheers.